Hey everybody, welcome back to Two Pixels Off with Brad Hussey and myself, Mike Janda. He is cracking open
the bubbly sparkling
water to kick off this episode. It's a righteous man's beer.
Yeah. Example. Shotgunning a bubbly. All I'm gonna do is have a lot of burps.
Oh man, you are wild.
Welcome to Two Pixels Off, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs.
Brad, we haven't seen each other for like a week and a half or so. We both went on vacation.
We did.
You went to where?
I went to, let's see, for the viewers listening, I went to a little town outside of Banff, Alberta. So Banff National Park, the big, you know, Western Canada ski resort. Probably you've heard of it. It's a world-class ski resort. We didn't go skiing. We've got young kids. Two of which can actually kind of ski. Our youngest, she's three, and so she can't ski. And so we don't get to do that stuff. So we basically just enjoyed the fresh mountain air, a little shopping. There's a hot tub and an outdoor pool there. So we got to enjoy some powder from base camp, let's call it. It was nice.
That's awesome. Good. I went to California, Southern California. Spent a week laying on the beach at Newport Beach. It was delightful.
That sounds great.
Had a couple rainy days, but man, I'm telling you, the beach. I live in the mountains.
Yep.
And I would never choose the mountains over the beach. I'm like, beach, I am a beach rat.
All day.
Ready to go beach.
I would do the same. Day. Yeah, I would do that the same. Like, we live in the foothills near the mountains. And the mountains are great, you know, but.
Yeah. Some people love them. Some people love them.
Yeah. But, you know, beach
and
is better.
More power to them.
I think it's objective truth.
Okay. So before we kick in to this, ask me why I live in the mountains.
So yeah, why do you live in the mountains if you're a beach rat?
I have no freaking idea, dude. I'm so stuck here.
You're just established there and you're hard to get out.
I don't know what I'm doing. This is no longer my choice. I do not know why I am here.
Yeah. Maybe it started out as just, you know, you start there, you don't think, you know, you just start setting roots, but you don't realize once the roots take hold, you know, that's home. And I don't know. I don't know about you. Cost of living. Like if we lived here, we are in Canada. Cost of living where I am is much lower than if I lived on the West Coast, you know, near the beaches and stuff like that. Now, our beaches in Canada are nothing like California beaches, but still, a beach.
But hey, I can go to other beaches in the United States and get comparable cost of living to what I have here. They're just not in California. And that's fine with me. I lived in California already. I did my turn. And lived in California and moved away from California. And shout out to all of the expats from California who have moved away.
Yep.
And shout out to all the people who still love it in California. And there are a lot of people who do, and I get it. I get why. All right.
Yep.
That's enough.
California
That's enough
talk.
Of our normal life. Don't get me started. I was going to start ripping on the commutes and all the living your life based on traffic patterns, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to refrain, and we're going to dig right into today's topic. But first, we want to shout out our sponsor, Wix Studio, our sponsor for this podcast. Wix Studio is a web design and development platform, no code necessary, built for agencies. And it's far beyond just creating websites, but it has all kinds of marketing tools that go in and support the conversion of your website viewers into actual customers, down to e-commerce tools and things to sell them, products, services, whatever you want to have happen on the back end of your business. So it's really powerful, powerful platform. And we are thankful to Wix Studio for bringing Brad and I together and making this podcast a reality. Anything else to shout out on Wix Studio?
I'm using their notebook. I got like, this is my...
Dude, look how sick that is.
I know. It's like I got the stickers.
Honestly, if you're watching the video version of this, look, shout out to freaking Wix. That's Wix in the early days was not highly regarded as a high-end design visual platform. Yeah. And it has changed because it has sick design. Shout out to the Wix studio and the Wix designers in general for creating some awesome products and templates and things to
honestly See, if you're looking for inspiration, honestly, like for design inspiration, the folks who design at Wix and Wix Studio, like their designers are, you know, when you see like award-winning designs because you're like, that's a piece of art. Like it's not just like, you know, you've got lots of the boring stuff of web design, you know, the structure and the architecture is very necessary. But when you get to see almost an artist do web design, that's like my experience with Wix Studios design. When you see them unleashed, it's crazy. And so if you're looking for like inspiration to be like, how do I make my websites and my design style just a little more interesting and you want inspiration, check out Wix Studios designers. And you can see it on their inspiration page. You can see it. They're winning awards, like right down to their products.
Really cool stuff.
Really good stuff.
Yeah. Really good stuff. Really impressive. It is not your mama's web design platform.
Yeah, it's not. That's right.
That is what it is not.
That's right.
It is not. They can use that tagline if they decide to rip it right out of this podcast. You can have that one for free.
Not your mama's.
Not your mama's.
Not your mama's
web
Wix
design platform. That's right. It's not your mama's Wix. It is not. All right. Last episode, episode number one, we kicked off talking about the best non-generic web, or not web, I'm stuck in web mind.
Yeah.
The best non-generic business advice that we wanted to share. And non-generic, meaning not the just same old cliched overdone stuff, but something a little bit out of the box. I shared talking about data-driven decision-making and tracking the data in your business and how to make decisions based on analytical data tracking and analysis. That's what my key point was. We talked about specific data points to track and what they can mean to your business. Brad, can you remind our listeners what you talked about in the last episode?
Yeah. So I, let's see here. I'm trying to go back.
You want me to re-jog you? I'll re-jog you.
Okay.
If you do it once, how many times should you do it again without a process?
So yeah, if
that's the question.
Yeah. So it's like if you repeat an action more than once, it's repetitive enough to be documented into a standard operating procedure so that you can get yourself out of it and delegate it to somebody or automate it. Or, you know, in the early days of you building up these instructions for your business, you can follow a process to maybe just kind of refine it. But the sooner you get yourself out of that, the better. So if you do something twice, then that should be an SOP and somebody else should be doing it for you. That's my first thing.
I love it.
Yeah. And
we belabored that in the last episode and today, and we didn't get to the final two points that we both shared at the start of the episode. So we broke this into a part two rather than slog on you a 2-hour initial episode of Two Pixels Off and just completely burn you out all right from the get-go. We decided we were going to break it into two parts. Yeah. Today's topics, I will bring up the hiring and scaling your business is not as scary as what you probably think. Going from one employee to five employees to 10, 10 employees to 20, 20 to 80, it's all based on similar mindset paradigms that we're going to talk about in today's episode. And then Brad, what are you bringing up as your non-generic business advice part two for today?
Yep. So this, I get two.
Do you need me to remind you?
I got, the next one is, do I get two or I get one?
You get one. You Perfect. Just get one. And you already shared what it was going to be, but I can remind you if you need it. I did some prep because I was like paranoid about our podcast. I was like, man, we got to have some structure here.
We got to keep this going.
We're going to go in and talk about.
No, I got it.
Yeah.
It's go for you no.
Got it. Go for no. That's
go
the one.
Go for no. And I like
go for no.
Packaging up ideas into fun phrases because then you remember them and then you can really get into it. You know, and this whole point of this is non-generic. So I don't want to just say a phrase like go for no. Yeah.
Sounds generic.
It does sound.
It sounds
it's like a hurrah.
Yeah.
But it's generic because the title is necessarily just a label for it, but it's underneath it that really matters. And what does go for no actually mean? Go for no means If you're going for a yes, and meaning like if you're approaching a lead, a potential client, a potential partner, and you want to launch something or build something, and you're only willing to try it because contingent on if there's a yes, then you're not going to do it, because you know that you're not going to just like nail it first try or first shot. You're not going to, you know, score on the first attempt. And so you just won't do it. You know, if it's like, I'll only do this if it's contingent on it succeeding. You're like, well, then you're not going to do it. And so you just don't end up doing it. So instead of focusing on if it's going to, like, only doing it because it's going to succeed, like, just collect a whole bunch of no, like a whole bunch of no's, a whole bunch of rejections, because it's only through that that, as we mentioned in our previous episode, you know, business is a numbers game. The language of business is numbers. So this is all, it's a play on that. It's, if I get 95 no's or rejections, I'm probably going to get, let's say, 5 yeses, and I only need 1 to 5 for, especially if you're charging for that, you're making money. So there's way more rejections and declines and opportunities that don't go anywhere, that's like almost the foundation of the yes, because most people are afraid to get rejected. The fear of failure, the fear of rejection. And that means that they're not going to ultimately get the yes. So they hesitate, they stay back. Whereas if you go for no, it's almost like you make it a strange obsession where it's actually a positive thing. Collecting a war chest of rejections.
Yeah.
Inevitably in that, you're going to win. And it's not just you get rejected and you get beaten down 100 times. The point is with each one, it's an opportunity to learn to get better, to learn why it didn't land, to learn how to message, to learn how to communicate, to learn how to find out what was holding them back. And maybe that's an opportunity to capture a sale. And then 100 times you get a no. The next 100, it's going to be much different, because you're not going to repeat the same mistakes. You'll go, well, I'm not going to say that next time. And I'm going to approach it different next time. I'm going to try this next time. So maybe it only is 50 rejections for as many, for 5 wins. And maybe it's only 10 rejections for 5 wins. And then you just get better and better and better. So go for no and be okay with the rejection.
I love it. Let's talk this one through a little more in detail as the kickoff, since you had a great intro on it. I was thinking while you were talking about two different things. The first one, I was thinking about that Michael Jordan ad. I don't know, maybe it's before your time, but there was this ad like in the 90s. And so it's a classic Nike cool brand ad. And he's like narrating and they're showing clips. And the clips were things like, I've missed 487 free throws and I've missed 728 3-pointers and I've taken 4,000 blah, blah shots and missed 2018 of them, blah, blah, blah. He gives all these stats. And then at the very end, it says, and that's why I succeed. That's the ad. And it was all cool and Nike's thing. I don't do it nearly the justice. Look it up on YouTube. But it's this memorable ad. And that's the whole point. This is why I succeed. I think the thing to ask yourself, if you have this go for no mindset, is that at the end of each no, you say to yourself, why did that happen? And what can I do to make sure that it never happens again? Why did the no happen? And what will I do to make sure it never happens again? Then you take your answer to that and you document it and turn it into an SOP of your own, or a knowledge database, or a future script database that you, I made this mistake, I said this, I will never say that again and ruin that for myself.
Yep. It's the same thing. It's almost like a mirror of my last point, which was if you happen to do it twice, then repeat, document it. In this case, it's like if you get a no, a rejection, find out why, ask yourself why, and maybe ask the person why. in the right way.
Yeah.
And then if that happens again, then you know that's a repeat offense, a repeat mistake, a repeat failure. Find out by documenting what that was through your own wondering why, asking why, and asking the person why, and then go, all right, well, I'm not making that mistake again. And that means that the next time you make an outreach, you're going to be that much more potent and effective because you're not just starting from scratch. You're actually starting with a knowledge base and an conscious effort to not make similar mistakes. So every attempt is going to get that much more effective.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I have a couple, I don't know if this is super applicable, but let me tell you a story about a massive mess up that I made. It wasn't client related. It wasn't a no, but it was a no to a job. So I'll share it just because I want to have stuff like this in the podcast. So after I was working for Fox 2000 to 2002, I was a creative director over Fox Kids, Fox Family, and the dot bomb happened and I start looking for jobs and applying all over the place. And then I interviewed at a few jobs, but one of them was at NBC Television. I was super excited because the commute was going to be less for me than what my commute was to Fox. It was still going to be a major Hollywood studio. I made it through my recruiter interview, and then I got a face-to-face interview with their creative director over their group. And my job would have been like senior art director or something like that. So one tier below the guy. So I'm interviewing with the guy, and the interview was going good. My portfolio, I mean, I was like such a slam dunk because the job was exactly what I was doing at Fox. And then he says, well, tell me, what do you want? What do you want to do for your career? Like, what's your goals for what you want to do in the roles you want to be in companies? And I said, oh, you know what? I loved my role at Fox. I loved being the creative director, being over all of the design side of things. That's what I love doing. It's what your role is right now. This is what I said to the guy. It's what your role is right now. And I heard those words coming out of my mouth thinking, oh my gosh, I just told this guy in the interview that I'm gunning for his job. This is what I'm going for. What's my dream job? It's your job is my dream job. And I was like, oh, it was the stupidest thing I think I've ever said in an interview ever. I don't know why I'm sharing that now, but it was definitely a no. And I did learn the lesson, man, be careful what you say in an interview. Do not lead on that you are trying to land their job. I could have spun that before and said, you know what? I understand your job. And I'm the right fit to make your job easier because I know what it's like to be in the meetings that you're in. And I can handle all the stuff going on while you're buried in the 4 hours of marketing meetings every day. You can know that I've got the reins and I'm making sure everything is churning and happening. Man, what a great, great response that would have been.
Yep.
Instead, I did the no response.
Well, it's good that you made the mistake because then we wouldn't have the Mike Jandowy no today. But
everything I share is based off of me blowing it in some way. It's like every piece of advice, here's how I sucked it up and here's what you should do to not suck it up.
Yeah.
That's Mike Janda advice 101.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So go for no. How do you turn this into actionable content for people?
Yeah.
What is it that, and while you're thinking on that, Brad, I'll share, I did around 2000 projects at my agency over our 13 year run. And we won 61% of those projects, which means that we did 2000 projects, which means we probably had 3000 pitches to land 2000 projects at a 61% win rate, which means I got a no 1,000 times. That's a lot of no's. Mm-hmm. A lot of no's. 61% win rate. That's a freaking killer win rate. Yeah. I'm so proud of that number. It's a killer win rate, but it still comes with all of those no's. And all those no's, 1,000 no's, are turned into processes and scripts and strategies that I replicated over time to empower my team to handle certain situations, to train other designers on how to handle certain situations. This is what I did. I documented this stuff. I was like, here's why I lost. My price was too high. What did I do wrong? I didn't ask price during qualification. Shame on me. I just wasted 15 hours making a proposal and I didn't know what the budget was. I'm never going to make that mistake again. These were the kinds of things that I documented out of that. So 1,000 no's, and that's a good win rate.
Yeah.
How do you turn this into some kind of actionable content?
Yeah.
Go for no.
How you go for no in an actionable way starting now would be, well, if we use this sports analogy of taking shots, the point of taking shots in, let's say, hockey or, you know, basketball is to score a goal. The more goals you score, you know, the more likely you'll win the game and whatever else that means afterwards. So, okay, if we can apply that, taking shots means more potential goals. More goals means we win. So in your creative business, what is taking shots? Taking shots, which lead to getting goals. And what is a goal? Let's say a goal is a client. You secure a deal and you land a client, a new gig, a project, whatever it is, an engagement that pays you. So the shots would be attempts at securing those deals. So what is that? Well, you'd say that's outreach, some sort of manual outreach effort. Now, there's lots of different ways. There's going to conferences. There's going to online summits and networking events. There's going to local networking events. There's lots of things. There's sending emails. There's making first point contacts. There's reaching out on LinkedIn. There's if you're in a community with your target market, there's reaching out, there's answering questions. I mean, there's a multitude of ways that you can do it. Now, I'm not saying do all of it, like, and just kind of the spray and pray, where you're just kind of like trying everything and you're not creating any sort of repetition. It'd be kind of like I'm practicing a 3-point shot and layups and dunks and half court shots, and you're just doing all the different shots and you're not dialing in the one shot where you're like, I shoot from the logo across from the 3-point line. I only shoot there. And if I shoot from there, I get better and better. I refine it. I can almost land right in the pocket every time. So you go find that spot and only do that to dial in its effectiveness. So make a list. Let's say you're in a group, an online group full of your target market, and they often ask questions that land squarely within your expertise. So these are shots that you can take. And so it wouldn't be by saying, hey, hire me 100 times, because that's going to get 100% no. You need to find a way that you're going to increase the likelihood of getting that conversation happening, getting it to the next step. So that would be, I'm going to add value, answer questions, you know, to in this group every day for 100 days, let's say. And that's what I'm going to do. I'll block time off to make sure that each day I block, you know, let's say it's 45 minutes or an hour to do this every day. Do the same thing. I'm going to add value. Anytime somebody asks a question that lands within my expertise, I'm the one with the best answer, the most value. And while everybody else is saying, hey, hire me, hire me, hire me, you're the one who stands out as the person who actually helps. And that's the person who that original post, original commenter will reach out and say, hey, that was amazing. That was really helpful. I'd like to talk to you about that. Is this something that you can help me out with professionally? You get on the sales call, you close a deal. Do that 100 times. Do that for 100 days. There's your shots. Maybe for you, there's a lot of conferences happening in your area. You got a big city, lots of events happening with your target market. Make sure that you go to these conferences and make your shot list. And that could be, I'm not leaving without having 50 meaningful conversations, even if they're short, where I get 50 business cards, let's say. You get the business card. Instead of them saying, hey, give me your business card, you say, no, give me yours. I'll follow up with you. And you do that. You know, you do 100 of those or 50 of those. Pick your position that you want to shoot from and shoot from it 100 times. And you're going to miss so many of them. And that's the point, because you're going to land 2 or 3 of them. And then when you do another 100 shots, it's going to be 5 to 8. And you do another 100 shots, it's going to be 10, 15. And then you're going to start getting so good at that, that anytime you get in that position, you can almost with, let's say, 40% accuracy, know that someone's coming your way. So that's what that is. Pick your position on the court and take the shot over and over and over again.
I like it. Okay. So how that would be actionable is create sales effort goals.
Yep.
You can't control the opportunities that come out of it, but you can control the amount of efforts or shots you take. Yep. So create goals related to that. Maybe it is, and one of the goals that I recommend for people is every single day you're going to do something that relates to sales, no matter what, whether you're busy or not.
Yep.
And something that relates to sales every single day could be emailing a client that you haven't emailed for a few months. It could be attending a luncheon or inviting somebody to lunch. It could be commenting on somebody's social media post of a client you're trying to nurture and attract. Yep. And you comment on their social media. It could be a wide variety of things that check that box of doing something that relates to sales every single day. That's a great goal. You mentioned going to a trade show. So you're going to a trade show, set the goal. I am not leaving this stupid trade show until I have 50 business cards and from 50 interactions with real people, yep. Not the business cards where you'd pick it up off the freaking table and walk away thinking that that's going to turn into something for you. This is the conversation with the people at the booth who are there because they want to have conversations with you. That's why they rented the freaking booth. So you're going to go and be the one that they talk to. You're going to get business cards and you're going to have people to follow up with. You go into it setting a shot list, yep. A goal of the number of shots that you want to take on that one thing. You can do this with any aspect of your business from a sales standpoint. How many cold reach outs on LinkedIn? How many social media posts do you want to post every single month? How many videos you want to post on YouTube every month? Or once a week, or whatever your goal is, and how long do you commit to doing that, to taking those shots? How many referrals do you want to ask for from your clients? Every single week, I'm going to ask for referrals from at least one client. That's my mission. That's my metric. I'm going to do that every single week, 52 weeks for the whole year.
Yep.
I'm going to ask 52 times for referrals. I'm going to reach out to every client I've ever worked with and once per quarter, and ask them if they have any projects coming up with. You look at your list of clients, you have 12 clients you've done work with or 20 clients or whatever it is, and you're gonna say each quarter, I'm gonna ask for more projects from them and you're gonna track it. This is the way to make this advice actionable. Turn it into something that you can check the boxes on and know that you are doing the efforts required to generate opportunities for you. Yep. And are you gonna get a lot of no's? Yep. You're also going to get a lot of not right nows, and you're going to get some scores.
Yep.
Score. Yes. Exactly. That's great. And in fact, a lot of the nos in our business, in this creative industry, a lot of the nos aren't nos. They're just not right nows. Mm-hmm. That's what they are. Not right now. You're not a fit for me right now. I don't have that need right now. But you can say to yourself, How do I become a fit for them in the future? I'm going to nurture this relationship for 3 years if I have to and turn myself into what is a fit for them. Or the not right now, I don't have any work for you. I'm going to nurture that relationship for the next 4 months. And sometime in the next 4 months, they're going to have a need. And I'm going to be top of mind because I nurtured it with my sales efforts, my touch points over time.
Yep.
I think that's how you make that actionable. Turn it into something that you can check those boxes and do those efforts because they will turn into a certain percentage of opportunities.
Yep. And you can measure it. You can use data and numbers to say, I've done this every day for 100 days and I could see my list. It's a checkbox or it's a list where you drag the card, whatever you do to document how many times you've done it. And then you could say, you could drag it into another list that says deals won and maybe laters to follow up in 3 months, you know, or in, you know, a couple months from now. And you can go, I've done this 100 times and 3 of them were yes. And of those 3, This was a $6,000 project. This was $14,000, and this one was a retainer of, you know, $3,000 a month that lasted this long. How much money is that? So in that attempt, those shots, I scored 3% of them. And that 3% equated for this much of my business revenue. That's not bad. I'm going to do 100 more shots, but I'm not going to make the mistakes here. And do it again, measure. Did I get a 4% close rate this time? Did I get a 10% close rate? What did that equate to? And so that's why going for no is not just like a nice sounding thing. You know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. The point of that is reach out to 100 people or go to your past client list and make it constant effort that you, like you just said, don't let a day go by in a business day. If you're working Monday to Friday, don't let one of those days go by without making, like doing a rep, taking a shot.
Yeah.
Cause then all you're going to do is you're just going to put it off. And then you're not going to have work and you're wondering, why don't I have work?
I hate my life. Nobody wants to hire me. What am I even doing this for?
Yep.
This is what's going to happen to you.
Yep.
Okay. Let me ask you some stupid questions for your response. Stupid question number one is, if somebody does 100 reach outs, strategic reach outs with potential clients, what is the percent chance that they get zero results from it? What do you think? Based on your experience and working with a lot of creative entrepreneurs in your communities and things like that.
What is the percent that it's going to be zero?
Yeah, that they're going to get nothing out of 100 strategically done sales efforts.
I would say that there's almost zero chance that nothing happens.
Okay.
Did I say that right? Was that double negative?
Yeah, I think we're in triple negatives, quadruple negatives, but yeah, I think you got it right.
Yeah.
There's almost 0% chance.
Yeah.
You will get work from it. Okay, now if you don't do any sales efforts at all, what is the percent chance that you're going to have zero opportunities?
I know the answer that come your way. That's a
what is it?
Full
you got this. This is a quadruple negative, quintuple right? Quintuple negative, spun on a positive. What is the answer?
Yep. This one's a full 100%. Did I get it right?
You think? I don't know the actual data, but
yeah.
But I'm going to give it like 99.5% chance, because there is a 0.5% chance that your referral. Mother is going to call you to have you redesign the logo for her sewing shop.
You're right. You know what? 100% is the wrong answer. You might get some happenstance thing. Somebody talks about you. You've done enough something in relationship building.
Something.
Where they go, oh, you know what? Mike does that. You should call Mike. And okay. Yeah. But here's the flip side to that is, let's say you make all those efforts and you get 95 rejections, which are maybe laters, not right now, or just total rejections. And you get 5 like AOKs. Good. But of those 95, and if you've added value, if you've helped out, or you were kind, you were courteous, you're professional, maybe you gave them a tip. You know, said, hey, you know what? This new thing happened with the search algorithm, and I know we did SEO work for you. Sounds like not right now. Totally makes sense. I would recommend doing these 3 things so that when it's time for us to work together, we're ready to go and you've already got some link juice happening or whatever that thing is that you gave them the advice on. What that's going to do is they're thinking about you, and maybe it's not right now for them, but somebody talks to them. They've got a network of their own and they say, we need an SEO agency. We're really kind of stuck here. I know the guy, talk to Mike. And then so of those 95 no's, some of those are potential referral sources. You're just building that network effect. So if you're not taking any shots, the likelihood of getting work is so low that you can't just rely on that. If you are taking shots, you can guarantee that you're going to get rejected or maybe laters. And you can also guarantee that something direct will come from it and something indirect will come from it.
I saw at my agency exponential growth after about 3 years. It was compound interest. And if you pull up, I love compound interest calculators. I calculate that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, if I got X amount of dollars and I put it in here and I sit on it for 20 years at this percent return, it's going to turn into Y amount of dollars. I love that thing. Too. I started to understand compound interest as it relates to client growth as well. If you go from one client to two in your first year, you doubled your company size. You doubled your client list. And in year number two, you go from one client or from two clients to three. Now you 50%ed it. There's something that happens at certain tipping points of your business where going from three clients to 10 happens in 1 year, and then 10 clients to 40 happens in the next year. There are these jumps that happen, and it's just like this compound interest thing that it takes so long to transition from one to two, two to four, four to eight or whatever. And then all of a sudden you're like, four to eight is doubling your number, but 8 to 16 is doubling your number also. And 16 to 32 is doubling your number again. And I saw this happen when I started to get the little bit bigger quantity of clients. I saw that doubling effect, and there's a big difference in what your revenue is if you have 32 clients versus 8 clients. Big difference in your annual revenue. Yep. And it's only 2 years away from you. Those of you that have 8 clients right now, you're 2 years away from keeping the same growth percentage that you have right now and having 32 clients and billing 5x, 10x what you're billing right now.
Should you maintain your outreach and your sales efforts and make go for no?
Good disclaimer. Good disclaimer.
If you stop, it's not going to do the hockey stick curve, as they call it, up and to the right. It's just going to go linear and then maybe flatline and go down. But you make those efforts, the network effect happens, the referrals happen, the outreach gets better, your strategies get better, your skills, your offer gets better, all of it. And then it just will compound and do exactly what you just said.
So good. Okay, you're going to have to get used to Brad sharing hockey metaphors.
I think so.
That's like the fourth one you've done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the fourth one you've done. It's the Canada effect.
Yeah, I think so.
He's pounding his sparkling water and shouting out hockey metaphors.
Yep.
I can barely keep up with
it. Barely keep up. I think that's a good segue from what we were just talking about, though, of now you got 32 clients. Now you got 40 clients. Now you're like, with all those clients, you obviously need to scale. You can't maintain that yourself. And so your point was scaling, hiring, growing, it's not as scary as you think. So how does that tie in?
Okay, I love this. Good transition. That's like if we were in a hockey game right now and you had the puck and you were going from defense to offense, you want to transition, that's what you just did. It was so masterful.
Wasn't it? So I didn't masterful. Go offside like I was on a breakaway.
No, nobody's offsides. Everybody's skating in unison. It's a beautiful game.
I love it.
Beautiful game.
It is.
Okay.
It's a dance.
Let's talk about scaling and that it's not as scary as you might think. I was so scared to hire my first employee, like deathly afraid. My first year in business, I did 220 in revenue, 220 grand in revenue. My second year, I did 240 grand in revenue. And then I finally started hiring people. It was like time. I was like, okay, I got money in the bank. I paid off my house. I was like just grinding, doing all the work myself. And I was stressed out of my mind. And I finally hired my first person. And I was scared to death of that. It was a high school kid who came over after school and he was good at computers. And I taught him some stuff and he grew into that. I think I shared some of that in the last episode. Anyway, the growth started to happen after I got over my fear of hiring. So I went from one employee to 5 employees by the end of that first year of hiring and had my first studio space. I was afraid of hiring my first full-time employee because I was sitting there thinking, I'm going to share a couple of paradigms that I went through. I was sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, hiring a $60,000 a year employee, I have to make 60 grand more per year to make ends meet. That means if I was doing 240 grand on my own, now I have to do 300 grand a year just to make the same amount of money. How am I ever going to do that? That was my fear. And so I resisted and resisted and resisted hiring people until I switched the paradigm and started to realize that I was not hiring a $60,000 a year employee. I was hiring a $5,000 per month trial run for 3 months. That's what I was trying. $5,000 a month is $60,000 per year. My risk was not $60,000 on this employee. My risk was I'm going to try this person out for 3 months. At $5,000 a month, I'm risking $15,000 on this employee experiment. And if the experiment goes well, then Sally is going to be making the business more money, making my life better. Everything's going to be better because Sally was great. If it does not go well, then Sally hates me and I probably hate Sally, and we decide to part ways after 3 months and I'm out $15,000. I'm not out $60,000. I'm not going to keep a bad cylinder for a year and spend $60,000. I'm not going to do that if it's not a fit. And so I changed this mindset and I started to look at my numbers a little differently. I started to think, okay, I have, let's say, $75,000 in the bank. And I wanted to keep around 60 in the bank for my business churn. That means I had $15,000 sitting in my bank account right there that I could experiment with by hiring Sally for 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, Sally's either going to be awesome and I would rather pay her than myself, or Sally is going to not be good and I'd rather let her go and she probably is going to leave anyway because she, if I hate it, she hates it. So that's the way that went. Now, you can look at these numbers a variety of different ways. You can look for that amount in your monthly profit. So take a look at your numbers and say, for the next 3 months, I have $5,000 of projected profit. I have a bunch of retainers. Let's say you want to take home $10,000 for yourself and you have $15,000 in revenue projected for this month, next month, and the month after because you have some retainers. You want 10 for yourself. You have 5 to play with to hire Sally. Or you could look at it and say, I have 65 in the bank. I'm willing to risk 5 of it. And over the next 3 months, I have $10,000 of profit that I can play with to hire Sally. Once I started to do that, it wasn't nearly as scary hiring people as what I thought it was going to be, because I was not making an annual risk. I was making a 3 month risk. And lo and behold, all my first employees were freaking awesome. And I kept them long term as long as they wanted to stay. In fact, one of those first employees is still at my agency. I left there 6 years ago and he's still there. He's the tech director at the agency that I sold to, that then got sold to another agency, and he's the tech director at the third owner of my agency. So it's some of these people will stay long term, some of them you'll let go, some of them won't work, some of them won't work for them and they'll leave. But you got to look at it in 3 month increments, not in my big load for an entire year.
I like that. So it's like you don't see it as this big upfront expense that you can't afford, because that means less money for you and you're already, you know, comfortable or maybe tight, so you can't afford it. But it's actually looking at it as a, you know, it's a smaller risk with a shorter term. And say in this case, $15,000 is way easier to stomach than a $60,000 upfront obligation, which it is not. And there's probably other mindset shifts in there too. I'd be curious to know one that I'm thinking of, and maybe this is one of your mindset shifts, but is the cost of you, like the actual expense that you are by doing their role.
Yes, it is on mine, but keep going.
So my thought is, and use it as a launching pad here. But my thought is, when I've hired people to help me out with various things, I go, I value my hour at, let's say, $250. Now I might not charge hourly rates, but to me, when I've done the math and the numbers, I would go, I should be making, or have been making on average based on my projects and everything like that, $250 per working hour. So let's say I'm a very expensive employee, which I am. at $250 per working hour. If I'm doing this task and I'm doing that for 10 hours a week, I'm basically I'm costing $2,500 per week, which is $10,000 roughly per month. So I'm paying, let's say in this hypothetical, well, not necessarily hypothetical. I've done this before. I'm paying $10,000 essentially for me to be doing this. And I'm only one person. Mm-hmm. I can't be also getting more leads, getting more sales, doing more calls, building the websites, doing the branding. I'm paying a lot of money for me to slow myself down. I don't think I can afford myself anymore. And that's when you go, this person for $5,000 per month for 3 months as a test to see if I'm right, and they do it better than you for $5,000, and now you're totally free to get more sales or to do your part better with less stress. That's like a deal you'll make every day.
Yeah, it's so true. And that's what happened to me. I went from billing 240 to 500 grand. I doubled my billings in that first year that I hired people. I went from one employee to five and went from revenue 240 to 500K something. And it was because of that exact thing. I started to realize, oh my gosh, it just cost me $125 of my time to order the pizza for the team for lunch. What in the world am I doing with my time when it's costing that much for me to do a task that I could hire somebody to do? I got so crazy about this exact thing that I started looking at mowing my lawn. I had a 3/4 acre lot and bought a riding mower and the whole deal. And I was mowing my lawn and it would still take a half a day on Saturday. So I'm at $250 an hour using your rate. It just cost me $1,000 to mow my lawn for 4 hours on Saturday morning. What am I doing mowing my freaking lawn for that? And I think you can see with rich people, they've got, you know, the uber rich. Oh, they've got servants and they've got their private jet and they've got their whatever. They got a cook and a chef, you know, on in their house and stuff. That's because their time is so freaking valuable that it is not financially wise for them to be flying commercial.
Yep.
They can't get the work done. They didn't sleep the night before because they're wheeling, dealing deals or whatever, or they're changing time zones or whatever. It is not financially viable. And so you can start going down that route. You can list all the things that you're doing that you could pay somebody who's further down on the ladder. I'm not saying you're hiring deadbeat people who have no future. You're just hiring people who were you 10 years ago, you 15 years ago, not you today that costs another $250. Hire you from a few years ago. That's where the magic starts to happen. And you're hiring these people that start to scale and grow with you and your business and eventually start taking more and more off of your plate.
It's like you become too expensive to do it yourself. You're not only a functional bottleneck and you get in your own way of performing operations, but you are expensive and you cost your business money and you are holding yourself back from generating more. It's just, you get too expensive for yourself to hire yourself for these things. And that's why hiring is not about, can I afford this? It's like, you can't afford to pay yourself to do this thing anymore. You need to find somebody else to do it for cheaper than that.
Yeah, so true. Okay, so let me tell the task I did when I unlocked the hiring spree at my agency. I got the advice from somebody. I went to an entrepreneur overnighter. You know, it was like Alcoholics Anonymous for entrepreneurs with no alcohol. It wasn't Alcoholics Anonymous. It was Entrepreneurs Anonymous. We all came in with our problems and talked about our massive addictions and challenges in our business. And I was like, man, I'm just burned out. I'm working 80-hour weeks. I can barely afford to be here. I don't know why I'm here. I need to be in my room designing crap. This was my problem. And I got the advice from a guy who, he wasn't an entrepreneur. He was a VP at a major bank around here. And but his dad was an entrepreneur. And he gave me the advice, don't do anything you can pay someone minimum wage to do. And I was like, oh my gosh, this blew my mind. Because I started thinking about my day and I started thinking, what are all the things that I could pay someone minimum wage to do? And so I started listening to stuff, listing invoicing. I'm collecting invoices. I'm putting receipts into freaking QuickBooks. I'm ordering the pizza for Friday team lunch. I'm ordering the shirts for our company party. I'm booking the company party. I'm buying paper. I'm going to Office Max or Office Depot and buying paper for the freaking printer. I'm buying ink cartridges. I was just going down the list of all this stuff that I was doing that I could pay somebody minimum wage to do, or at least far less than what I was earning myself. Yeah. And that unlocked me. Then I started taking that list and organizing it into chunks. And I would be like, okay, I could hire one person who could do invoicing, collections, bookkeeping, order pizza, go to Office Max. I could hire a person for all that. And then I was like, wait, I have a whole list of stuff like designing the sub pages for a website. I can do the main page, get approval from the client, and then I can have somebody take that main page and skin my wireframes that I created with the design style, and then I can approve it. That's something that I could have somebody do. And I started doing that. I got down to where I was having just like intern level people take all the assets for a new project and pile them all into one document so that when I opened the document, I had a bunch of layers. We did a lot in Photoshop back then. I had all these layers with all the different assets that I needed to do to use to design this ad or this banner or this website or whatever. But it was all populated with the assets for me. It wasn't any design. It was just, here's the stuff you need to have. Here's the about copy and here's the nav text and stuff. So I could just open it and get the layers. You can get creative and start to see a lot of places that you are touching your business that you don't need to be touching it. You need to get somebody else to start doing those things.
I would add maybe as a, okay, what are the actionable things you could do to this to actually attain this key point of scaling? Because it was about mindset. There's a lot of mindset shifts, but what can you tangibly do to start working towards that? And I would say what you just said was make a list of everything that you're doing, every task that you're doing, document and audit every task that you perform in a workday for like, do it for like a week. Just put it in a journal or whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter how you do it. Then look at it at the end of the week and then categorize them and go, well, I order a lot of pizza, or I've been doing a lot of Home Depot runs for this supply, or I've been going to Staples to get print cartridges or whatever it is, or I'm sending a lot of emails, or I'm doing a lot of follow-ups or doing bug fixes. And you're like, wait a minute. Okay. How many hours does that take me? Because you're going to document how long you did these tasks for. And you go, whoa, that was 15 hours. And I'm at $200 an hour. Oh my goodness. That's expensive. And then you put it in buckets and say, which of these tasks have to be me? There's probably one or two of those tasks that have to be you, to be honest. Put that there. What are these tasks that I just get rid of entirely that are actually adding no value? Eliminate those. Okay, which of these can be delegated to somebody else? And then put those into, what are the roles? And this is an assistant, this is an HR person, or this is a web designer, this is a programmer, this is whatever it is. And then you go, or a project manager. And then you go, all right, well, project management costs me this much a week. What if I just hired somebody for less than that and paid them that, and we try it for 3 months? So audit your entire task activities and how long you've done it. Do it for a full week and then look at it and go, all right, which of this need do I eliminate and which of these should I consider hiring a role for?
I like it. It doesn't just have to be the minimum wage level stuff. You started to allude to this. It can be, I spent 1 hour each day in a design presentation to my clients, presenting design work for approval or for feedback. Yeah. It can be that stuff too. Now put that stuff on your list, but it's usually not the first things you're going to hire for. Usually you're going to jump in and start hiring for some of the more accessible tasks, not the high level stuff. You're probably, if you're, you know, a small agency, 1 to 5 people or something, you're probably going to be involved in the design until you have 10, 12 people. And one of them's a creative director who is you 5 years ago, not you 20 years ago, but you 5 years ago. That's who's going to be your creative director, and they will shine under your mentorship. At that point, they'll be doing some of those higher level tasks, but put them on the list so that you can categorize them under future creative director needs to do this. Future business development director needs to be doing this thing that I'm doing right now, setting up sales meetings and stuff. Yep. I'll go and I'll sell, but I'm not going to be the liaison in that sales cycle. Yep. I'm going to be the salesperson who shows up in the meeting to close the deal. So that's great advice. It's really actionable way to scale and to make it not nearly as scary as what you think. My size blew up after I started hiring. And one of the fears, Brad, that I had was, oh no, now I have to make more money in order to afford all these employees. That was never a freaking problem. Man, it seemed like every person I hired all of a sudden empowered me to have more time to be able to do sales, to mentor people, to improve the deliveries, improve the work quality, improve our processes and document our SOPs and the things that made my business run smoothly. And every improvement that I made seemed to unlock new levels of project size and revenue. So this is how you know you got somebody good. If you hire that person, and if after 90 days, they have not freed you up from some of the things that you're doing and empowered you to be able to make more money, then they're probably not the right fit. And most of the time you'll see it within the first 3 months. Maybe it takes 6 months, and maybe after 3 months, you look at them and say, all right, that was good. I really like them. They still got a little ways to go. I'm going to re-up my commitment, my mental commitment to them for 3 more months. And I'll do the 6 month run, and then I'll really assess. But I really think that they're the right fit. And so you just emotionally re-up yourself for the next phase of 3 months, just 3 months on top of 3 months. And then you'll get to the point where it's like you hire somebody, you know, mentally it's a 3 month thing. You don't expect them to go anywhere, and you're not worried about paying them even for the next year or two or three. You start having so much money sitting in the bank or so many retainers that it's easy to hire people without those initial fears.
That's yeah, I like that. I think what we should do here is let's go back and see if we can take like maybe two like poignant takeaways from these
good
points here. So,
all right, you go first.
I'll go first. This is with yours, and then you do mine, and then I think that.
Oh boy, I got to do yours. Okay.
Unless did you already recap mine? I don't think you recapped mine.
No, man, we didn't. We're gonna recap. We're gonna alternate the recap. Just any key points out of any part of our conversation today, just as a recap for everybody who was listening to our podcast for this session.
Big takeaway for me on this conversation that we had was, hiring and scaling is first and foremost a mental shift. And once you have that mental shift, so the mindset shift, paradigm shift, whatever you want to skin it, and that mental shift comes not from some big spiritual aha moment. It comes from literally, again, going back to the language of business, which is the data and the numbers. And you go, well, this is how much it costs me to do this task over and over again repetitively. And that's expensive. Can I hire somebody for less than that to do it for me? And I'm not committing to a year. It's not a $60,000 price tag. It's a $5,000 a month for 3 month price tag. I'm already paying more by getting in my own way and doing it myself. So I can afford to do that. And I will see if it's worth it. And I will see if it's actually freed me up and enabled me, empowered me to make more money and to take my business to the next level. If it's not the case, then okay, you part ways amicably. So for me, the big takeaway there is like scaling and growing and hiring is not this big, scary, this is what the big business people do and you need to make millions before you even do that. It's literally when you feel that you're in the way and you're expensive, you find out, how can I get somebody to replace me because I'm already paying and it's not helping us out. So that to me is a big takeaway here. It's that mental shift by looking at the numbers and realizing that you need to make changes.
I like it. Okay, I'm going to elaborate on one just in brief, but I mentioned mowing your own lawn. This extends beyond just your business. I started to look at mowing my lawn costing me $1,000 every Saturday, and I could hire a lawn care company to come in with industrial level equipment and they knocked it out in like 35, 45 minutes, what would take me 4 hours by myself to edge it and mow it and dump the grass and all the stuff. They had this powerful stuff. It was costing me $1,000 of my time, and it was only costing $75 to hire somebody to come and do it. It extends, this mindset can extend beyond just the business tasks. There was a guy, I'm not a fan of this one, but he hired a driver. He was like a one-man shop. Maybe he had one employee or something. He hired a driver. He said, I was driving around to so many meetings and I decided I was going to hire a driver. And so we're not in like New York City here, but he hired a driver to drive him to and from meetings and stuff so he could work in the car and have his calls and whatever. It's that kind of mindset. I applaud the mindset. I never did that ever in my agency run, but that's the mindset. It's like you know Brian Regan, the comedian.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. So funny. So funny. So look up Brian Regan and first class, airline tickets. And he was like, I always feel so bad when I get on. And then I walk past all the first class people and they're like sitting there on their computers and they're like, I'm making money right now. Making money right now. And I'm walking back to the coach area where all of the losers are in coach. This was his mindset. Yeah. And it's his joke. But that's the kind of mindset. This is why people fly first class, because they work on the plane. Yeah. Some of them, not all of them. But this is a mindset that you can bring to the table. I fly direct when I did any business travel. I was like, I'm not fucking taking... I can't financially afford to have a 3-hour layover somewhere in the middle of the United States to save $75 on the ticket when I could just fly direct and then get more time with my clients. Yep. This is the kind of mindset that you have to have. So it extends beyond just the business stuff. Look at your personal time too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great takeaway.
Got on a couple little Brian Regan tangents and stuff in there, but I'll throw it in there for fun,
for giggles.
All right, what got another takeaway? Let's rapid fire these ones.
Rapid fire takeaway. Okay. No, I'm not going to take away our previous episode. Going for no is not just a platitude. It's literally make a shot list of repetitive actions that have the potential of getting you goals in your business. So make that list and say, I'm not leaving this conference. When I go to that conference, I'm not leaving without 50 business cards that came from 50 actual interactions with people that were meaningful. Or I don't have a day go by without sending 5 emails to past clients checking in. Or I don't let a week go by without 15 outreach to potential new clients to get them on the phone. You have to put in the effort. You have to put in the reps. You have to take the shots and you have to get the rejections and then and maybe laters and the now's not a good times, because without those, you don't get the actual deals. You don't get them. You can't just sit and wait for them. The people who get them are the ones who actually go out and get them and get told no over and over and over again.
Good. Okay. And with every no, ask yourself, why did they say no? And what can I do to never have that happen again?
Yeah.
And document the answer to that question, because that's the stuff that's going to level up your business. See how rapid fire that was?
That was better than mine.
One sentence.
Yeah.
I was in the zone.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on our takeaways, key takeaways?
No, I think for me that if you can ruminate on those two points, then that's I think you can go real far with just those two things. Going for no and understanding the scaling is not that scary.
It's scaling is not that scary. Go for no.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay, Brad, this was super fun, as it was last time. Hopefully all of the Two Pixels Off listeners got some little morsel out of our conversation that can help you in your business. We appreciate reviews. This is a new podcast. We're just getting it going. Please drop a review in your favorite podcast platform and let us know what you think of the podcast, as long as it's like 5 stars and you're like happy listening. If you don't like it, if you cannot stand one more second of listening to Brad talk about hockey, you're like, don't put that in the review. No, we don't need that information.
Send us an email.
Just move along. Move along to your the rest of your life. You do not have to listen to Two Pixels Off. This is your choice. So if you are still listening at this point, give us a review and make it a good one. We really, really appreciate it. We're going to try and drop a ton of value to our listeners, and we'll be back every week. We have made a long-term commitment to this show, and we plan to drop a ton of value. So we will see you again next time on Two Pixels Off. Brad, you got any closing comments?
I think like we should have a cool phrase that we should work on when we sign off. There's something about the each of us are a pixel, you know, like pixel off. And you pixel off. You know what I mean? Ooh. I'm trying to work.
We could sing a little jingle like two pixels off. something along those lines. Something along those lines.
That'd be our intro bumper. Two pixels off.
Two pixels off. And we are out.